Right. Good morning, everybody. Today is Monday, November 2nd, 2015. And this is Before the First Cup of Jewels here on UCY.TV. Happy Monday, everybody. We're here again. It is 50 degrees and partly cloudy here in upstate New York. It's a pretty decent weekend. And we're supposed to have 60s and potentially even 70s this week. So we might get our last dose of nice weather before winter settles in. So where do we leave off on Friday? We titled the show Food Future, Resistant Consumers, and Walmart Drones. Last couple of days, we'd been looking at some of the poisoning of the food system and some of the PSYOP that's currently going on, where the UN came out and decided that, yeah, meat's bad and bugs are good, and look at all the reasons why you should be eating bugs. We also looked at some of Dr. Huber over the last few days. Dr. Huber, 50-year plant pathologist with some of the highest levels of security within the federal government and intelligence in regards to biowarfare program. And Dr. Huber has come out and spoken about glyphosate and all of the different findings that he has been looking at for a number of years in regards to glyphosate in the food chain, how it damages nutritional uptake. It's an antibiotic. It kills the good bacteria, not only in the soil and the plants, but also in the gut. They're finding it in plants and animals and humans, and it's not a good thing. Of course, we also looked at Walmart. So I still can't even believe this. Walmart is jumping on the bandwagon, and they're going to start testing drones for home delivery and pickup. So look out, man. Chinese drones in the sky before you know it. So I want to kind of take a little right turn and get to one of our nemesis out there, DARPA, good old DARPA. We haven't talked about DARPA in a while. And I'm just going to warn you that I've had some technical issues already this morning. There have been two outages since I woke up. So let's cross our fingers and hope that everything stays copacetic this morning. So where we're going to start off with looking at DARPA, because I found some disturbing news over the weekend, is our good old friend Regina Duggan. I've talked about her many, many times before. Regina Duggan had been a director at DARPA. Then we found out that she was leaving to head Google's Motorola division originally for mobile phones. Then I had heard that it was kind of turning into the smart division, and it has a new name now because it's not just their Motorola Android division. It is titled the Advanced Technology and Projects Group. Their acronym is ATAP. Let's take a look at what they're doing now. This is where, like, the Internet of Things, the wearable computing that we've talked about. I just saw recently that Google and Levi's have teamed up now for wearable smart clothes. So this should be quite interesting. Anyway, this story is out of CIO.com. I used to get this publication for many years. Haven't been out here in a long time. Inside Google's Advanced Technology and Projects Group, says using the playbook she brought from the Defense Advanced Research Project Agency, Regina Duggan drives rapid technology innovation at Google's ATAP group. Now, one of the reasons why Regina Duggan had become someone I focused on too is, if you guys remember, there had been an interview with her way back when, and we'd played it a few times, where she talked about ingesting a pill that would give her superpowers. It would turn her into a cipher key to be able to access rooms or technology with the flash of her hand or walking through a doorway just because of this little super pill that she had swallowed. And that's pretty scary to me, especially when we take a look at all of the other things that we've talked about in regards to genetic modification, vaccinations, and being able to put small nanoparticles into these injections or into our food, stuff that we have no idea whether or not it's in our bodies already. And Regina Duggan was at the forefront of that. DARPA sprinkles around all these development dollars. And we're going to find out when we look at the next story. I've been talking about that for a long time, but they actually mention that. They don't have their own R&D. They just sprinkle it around at the universities and get our children to do the evil science for us. So anyway, let's get back to the story about Regina Duggan. This is from June 30th of 2015, so it's not that old. Epic. And yes, remember Regina Duggan using the word epic. Epic was the word Regina Duggan used to describe her team's research and development projects that included enlisting, quote unquote, Fast and Furious movie franchise director Justin Lin to help create the next generation movie experience. Duggan, Fast and Furious, like how telling is it? Duggan, vice president of Google's Advanced Technology and Projects Group, more affectionately known as ATAP, delighted thousands of developers in May at Google's annual I/O conference as she orchestrated demonstrations of applied technologies that seemed to originate from just over the horizon of humans' imaginations. The 36 pages of results when you Google her name confirms Duggan's fame, making kudos redundant. But reporting where she came from is important because it explains ATAP's role within Google. Duggan's last job was head of the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, or DARPA, a 50-year-old Department of Defense research agency with a budget of about $3 billion that's charged with preventing strategic surprises from and for creating strategic surprises for America's adversaries. DARPA earned a reputation for producing high-impact results quickly, and a few of DARPA's innovations include, of course, the internet, global positioning satellites, drones, and micro-electro-mechanical systems, MEMS. And we also found out, of course, they admit to creating Siri as well. In an interview that we heard not too long ago with DARPA's director, which I can never say her name, DARPA isn't a monolithic. They say they are not a monolithic government agency. It does not have its own labs or large R&D staff. Instead, the agency recruits teams of highly accomplished technical leaders, usually PhDs and experts in their field, to work on short 3 to 5 year projects with university and industry partners. Now, did you hear that? This is exactly what we've been saying. DARPA sprinkles this money at the universities and gets them to build the machine, as well as industry partners, mind you. I would assume that that includes companies such as Google, Amazon, probably Cisco, and some of the others, all of these technical liaisons, collaborations that they have now going with the federal government. The goals are ambitious, such as building a hypersonic test vehicle to fly at Mach 20, which is around 15,200 miles per hour. And DARPA doesn't build projects. It proves or disproves the feasibility of building a solution that could be developed into a product. This is an important distinction that explains DARPA's role. Successes in building prototypes gives tangible evidence that a strategic end product could be built. Well, isn't that nice how CIO just put such a pretty picture on DARPA? I love it. Duggan joined Google to create the ATAP group, where she could apply the DARPA model to speed Google's strategic research projects. And don't forget, we have Google, Duggan, and then who came in after that? Good old Kurzweil is their head of engineering, with his transhumanist agenda, working on his AI. And that's where we're going to kind of go today. Anyway, back to Duggan. She traded the Department of Defense's deep pockets for Google's. And remember, when Kurzweil got hired, he said he had an unlimited budget, by the way. And exchanged fighting America's adversaries for fighting perplexing product development challenges. Dugan's first demonstrations addressed the unique user interface problems posed by smartwatches, and we've talked about those. That's all part of the Calico project. Due to the small size of wearables. And don't forget also, there's a brand new Android operating system that is specifically for wearable devices and clothing computing. The tiny or some, in some cases, non-existent wearable screens essentially call for new user interfaces. The ATAP, the Advanced Technology Division of Google, applied trusted radar radio technologies to control another device with a touchless user interface that interprets fine finger movements and hand gestures made in the air. And this was one of the things when she was at DARPA and she swallowed that pill, she was talking about being able to wave your hand and authenticate yourself, let's say. Well, look at now they're using some sort of radar radio technologies. And this is just some really insane science fiction stuff with very large budgets and all the smartest minds working to enslave us. The prototype device shown at this I.O. conference in May captured the radar reflection of a movement and applied machine learning for accurate recognition. So, I mean, they're even using machine learning and AI to be able to interpret hand motions now. Not just facial, 230-point recognition, and now they can even detect your moods, but also detect your hand motions. And any movement interpreted by the radar UI can be a metaphor for any input, such as up, down, make a call, or take a photo. And I remember seeing some of the research they were doing in that in regards to controlling drones at one point in just using hand motions. It says an example of one such metaphor was demonstrated with a thumb and forefinger twirling motion in the air that reset the time on a digital clock display. And then they have a little video here, which I'm not going to play right now. We can dig into this. This really isn't my focus for today. Second demonstration during this conference was of wearable products, codenamed product Project Jacquard, as in cloth. How to weave a multi-touch input panel like a mouse pad into regular cloth using existing textile industries processes. And I bet this is where the whole Levi's project comes in. Now, multi-touch has been around since IBM's first experimented with it back in the 1960s, and it is now used in every touchpad and touchscreen. No need for ATAP's high-powered R&D for that. So they must have licensed IBM's technology. Redesigning multi-touch so that it could be produced by the textile industry at scale, however, is right in ATAP's wheelhouse. All right, so now we got a good feeling for some of the stuff that ATAP's working on. It sounds like it's just mobile devices, but let's just turn this like 1 degree to the left and go back and think about also all that we know about the Internet of Things. The Internet of Things is part of this ubiquitous computing and this very small interface connected technology. We're going to have all devices, not just clothing, not just our little wristwatches that can keep an eye on your cholesterol. You're going to have your refrigerator, your washing machine, the lights in your house will be doing Li-Fi and connected, and everything will be going back to the database. Well, wasn't I surprised when a character that we had looked at, oh, I don't know, maybe 6 months ago, I know it's in the title of the show, good old DARPA Dan Kaufman from DARPA, he was working on a lot of the projects like Plan X and the new Sentry system to be able to watch the Internet of Things without human intervention and seek and destroy any type of quote-unquote cyber attacks. He's the one that was using the Oculus Rift glasses with soldiers because soldiers are not hackers. And he was able to build a user interface, having been from the gaming world originally, so that they can have a full display of internet networks out there, of computers that seem to be infected or seem to have been hacked, and use hand and body movements to launch attacks on those hackers, not having to code. 60 Minutes did an expose that I actually was able to dig up. So we're going to listen to that again after we talk about this. But guess who has gone to Google working with Regina Duggan? Da-da-da-da, good old DARPA Dan. Not sure how I missed this one. June 2nd, 2015, DARPA Dan joins Google's mobile lab as deputy director. The talent swap continues. DARPA's Dan Kaufman is heading to Silicon Valley, where he will reunite with a former DARPA director, good old Regina Duggan. One of the federal government's biggest tech personalities is leaving to join one of the world's biggest tech companies. Multiple sources confirmed to FedScoop that Dan Kaufman, director of the Defense Advanced Research Project Agency's Information Innovation Office, was named deputy director of Google's Advanced Technology and Projects Group, or ATAP. Better known as DARPA Dan, Kaufman has been the agency's public face as of late, appearing on various television programs and at various conferences to highlight DARPA's work in areas like cybersecurity, the Internet of Things, and autonomous vehicles. And yes, he also was one of the ones that, and we'll hear it again when we listen to his 60 Minutes interview, that showed how easy it was to hack any current car. And remember, that was important after Michael Hastings had his mysterious demise in his new, I think it was a Beamer. And people had said, well, it's possible to hack a car very easily. And we heard that Kathleen, oh, I don't remember her last name, from DARPA, do an entire lecture on how easy it was to hack a car. Anyway, back to the story. Kaufman will be working with former DARPA director Regina Duggan, who left the agency in 2012 to create and direct ATAP, Google's research and development lab dedicated to creating next generation mobile devices and services. And it's interesting that the way they word it here is that Duggan left to go to Google and create this division, when I very distinctly remember reading that when Duggan left, there were some questions about her doing business with another company that either was one of hers or one of her husband's or her uncle's or a family member's, where she was cutting large contracts without them going to bid. But anyway, the official story is she left the agency in 2012 to create and direct ATAP, Google's research and development lab, dedicated to creating next generation mobile devices and services. Kaufman has been in the news recently for his work with Memex, a DARPA-created search engine that combs the dark web for illicit activity. And actually, tomorrow, I think we're going to look at some dark web stuff because there have been a few new things that I've run across recently. There was a TEDx that came out about the dark web and exactly what I've been saying. I mean, this is all about the loss for anonymity, and they're coming at us full frontal from every level down to cellular. But the dark web, one of its largest premises has been able or to be able to hide your identity, whether it is for illicit or legal activities. And the fact that DARPA is putting their technologies at cracking the dark web basically says that they are giving you nowhere else to hide. But good old John McAfee has a solution. And we actually had him on as a guest a couple of weeks ago. SM Gibson had him on Anti-Media Radio. That is in their playlist on the UCY YouTube. So if you want to check that out, it was a great interview. Anyway, back to DARPA Dan. he was interviewed by 60 Minutes to explain how Memex worked earlier this year, as well as some other things. And that's the interview we'll listen to in a few minutes. ATAP, that's Google's division, has also been in the news recently for a number of projects announced at Google's I.O. conference, the company's annual developer conference. Among the projects ATAP unveiled was Project Jacquard, and that's the one I mentioned, a process that weaves electronic components into textiles to program touch or gesture interactivity to not only clothing, but also your furniture. Come on. Hand movement couch, please. Leg rest up. Boop. I mean, this is just insane. I really don't want to live in George Jetson's living room. Other recent projects to come out of ATAP are Project Aura, which is a customizable smartphone that users can build piece by piece. And yes, that was one of the first projects I read about that Dugan was working on. And then also Project Tango, a tablet-based sensor system that allows people to create 3D maps of their surroundings. And yeah, that won't come in handy for spy agencies. And I think we read about some of that also using a room's Wi-Fi. I mean, way back when that they were tinkering with being able to use those signals to build a 3D representation of the room that any Wi-Fi router was in. The move is another spin of the revolving door of talent between who? Well, this one happens to be the Silicon Valley giant Google and the federal government. Surprise, surprise. Current U.S. CTO, and this is the CTO of the United States, which is a new position that Obama created in the middle of this. Holy shit, we're getting hacked. And we need to get this 21st century medicine and infrastructure rolling. Current U.S. CTO, which is Chief Technology Officer Megan Smith, was also a vice president at Google. That happened to be Google X, another research lab best known for creating Google Glass and the company's driverless car prior to coming to Washington. So what a bitch slap to the people that is. Google is not evil, remember, used to be their tagline. Google knows everything about you. This is horrifying. Add to that what we talked about a few weeks ago, good old Sergey Brin, co-founder of Google. His wife is one of the, I don't know, she's a CFO, CTO, CEO of 23andMe. It's dumping their genomics data of close to 1 million individuals to the National Institutes of Health. A number of former Google engineers and policy analysts are now working on federal projects like Mickey Dickerson with the U.S. Digital Service. I have no idea what that is. We should look into that. Or shaping tech policy like Alan Davidson at the Commerce Department. I mean, how horrifying. Google is in bed 24/7 with the feds. And DARPA. Brian Pierce, the deputy director of DARPA's Information Innovation Office, will take over Kaufman's current job. Kaufman's last day at DARPA was June 12th of 2015. So now let's rewind just a tiny bit here, and we're going to see if I already called myself before the show. I was thinking ahead. So let's see if I can connect again, because we're going to play the interview that 60 Minutes did with DARPA Dan. So you guys understand what they have just given to Google as part of his previous experience. All right. I am not going to be able to scroll up here. So hold on, because I might have to sing. Look out. Oh, hey, look, I can scroll. All right. The name of this story out of CBS was DARPA, Nobody is Safe on the Internet. Oh, fear. Meet the man the Department of Defense has put in charge of inventing technology to secure the Internet. And this was from February 8th of 2015, just a few months before he left and went to Google. The recent cyber... Oh, so this is a transcript, actually, of what we're going to play. So let's let Leslie Stahl of 60 Minutes read it for us while I drink a little bit of coffee. All right, here we go. 60 Minutes interview with DARPA Dan. Maybe.
The recent cyber invasions of Insurer Anthem, Sony Studios, and the military's Twitter and YouTube accounts highlight how hacking has morphed from a commercial nuisance to a matter of national security.
Ding, ding. Now, how many times have I said that? Like, I've been in technology for 25 years. And yeah, there were hacks. Usually it was a little Russian hacker or somebody out of Romania or one of those former Soviet bloc nations. And maybe you had, you know, some information stolen. But trust me, I was in the departments that worked on securing all of that. It was not on a corporate level, something that we worried about 24/7. You know, you kept your eyes on the logs, but it was not this complete and utter fear, fear, fear-based, the hackers are coming to get us. But look, oh my God, they hacked some huge health insurance companies, then some government agencies. They got, and this must have been before the federal employee office as well. And they also got all the records for undercover agents as well as fingerprints. Holy shit. We better throw all the money and some of the smartest minds under the guise of national security to locking down the internet from those anonymous hackers.
The man the Department of Defense has tasked with inventing technology to wage this new internet war is Dan Kaufman. He heads the Software Innovation Division of DARPA, the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, in charge of maintaining our military technological superiority. It makes sense that DARPA is working on this. After all, it invented the internet.
But yes, well, after all, it invented the internet and brain computer interfaces and all this other push button joystick to get dopamine or adrenaline into a soldier's brain when he's showing fear. I mean, this is really, really, really scary when you look at Google, DARPA, and Kurzweil are all working together with the federal government, the National Institute of Mental Health. Remember, the director from there just moved over to one of Google's new ancillary companies within Alphabet.
Kaufman is an unexpected choice. He's not a general or a scientist or engineer. He's a video gamer. Call him DARPA Dan. And he says it's only right that the agency that brought us the internet find a way to secure it.
The story will continue in a moment.
How common are attacks, cyber attacks against the U.S. military?
It's common.
It's common, a lot.
Oh, yeah.
Every day?
Every day.
Dan Kaufman has been monitoring the rising cyber threat for 6 years as the head of DARPA's Information Innovation Office in Arlington, Virginia.
The number of attacks is dramatically increasing. The sophistication of the attacks is increasing. So my job is not to wait for something catastrophic to happen and then say, oh, goodness, we should do something. My job is to say, I see this trend line going. I want to be way ahead of this line.
Do you consider dealing with cyber war your main mission?
No, I don't. It's not my main mission, but it's about half my office. So
half your office is dealing with this.
Is absolutely both.
Cyber war, no less. I mean, remember when Obama came out and said that when the Sony hack happened, and they of course pointed to the Chinese, that a cyber attack is an act of war. That was when it became national security. We had good old Keith Alexander from the NSA. We did a 2 or 3 day expose last summer on him. We read it was a very large story out of Wired magazine. Look it up and understand where the internet became a war field.
Offense and defense.
One of their defensive inventions is this ambitious prototype that, when in operation, will be able to scan the military's global computer network and zero in on any machine that may have been hacked.
Now, this is called Plan X. And, you know, when they're outlining this, and we'll hear this in a second, they are working on a Surface computer. If you've ever seen them, it looks like the old school arcade Pizza Hut video games where you'd sit down at the tabletop and you would play, except now it's all touchscreen. Microsoft is the one who came out with the Surface computing, but it's all touchscreen, zoom in, zoom out, and they have maps of the United States, and you could zoom out to the globe, and they show all these nodes on the network, and then they're saying, of course, it's military, but it could be anywhere. It could be the internet, for that matter, showing machines that are quote unquote compromised. Well, you know what? This very easily could be your machine, my machine, anyone who's had a tag put on it as a quote unquote insurgent.
Yellow nodes are the ones that are running ARP software, and blue are the ones that's interrogating or asking.
Within seconds, the compromised computers pop up as red dots.
And the idea is that these computers have been hacked.
Yes.
And someone has control of them and is taking secret information away from the military.
Exactly right. And before, as you saw, it would be completely invisible to us because you're hiding among tens of thousands of computers around the world. Now, you and I can see this very quickly, and we know exactly what's going
on. Stunning. And in just a couple of minutes.
Yes.
Or less, even.
More than that. From here, you could absolutely start. I could say, let's shut that computer down. Let's quarantine that computer off.
Ding, 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 ding. You know, all the weird computer problems that everybody has. Plan X is what I think is going on. You know, they can literally see the entire network, whether it be, like he's saying, well, it's the military network, but they could then turn this whole thing on its head and point it at the internet. And the machines that have been, quote unquote, compromised show up in red. Well, we found out back, let's go even 3.5 or 4 years ago, that the Department of Defense has been working with companies such as the Hacking Team to be able to find vulnerabilities in applications such as Adobe Flash, and then they insert little backdoor programs to do spying and suck data off your machine. Well, that most certainly would show up as a compromise, and then, like you just said, you can turn those machines off or quarantine them. How many of us haven't had major issues being cut off the internet, not being able to get somewhere, everything going into slow-mo?
It looks like a video game. That's not entirely an accident. Before DARPA, Kaufman made a fortune running several cutting-edge video game companies. His only military experience is make-believe. He helped invent the popular war game series Medal of Honor.
And then 9/11 happened. And it shocked me to my soul. And I thought, I've lived incredibly well off this country. And
I can't even believe he then invokes 9/11. He says, and then 9/11 happened. Yes, of course. Let's make sure we reinforce that.
I want to give something back, but I have no idea how to work for the government. I mean, I had never thought about it. I'd never been to Washington, D.C. And I did what all nerds do. I went to Barnes & Noble. And I got a big book. So it said government jobs. It was a big book. And I thumbed through it. And I said, I will find something and I will donate some time. And I decided I would hunt serial killers. So I cold called the FBI.
Oh, and then he decided he'd hunt serial killers. That's how he'd give back after 9/11. I mean, what?
I'm sure I'm still on a list somewhere. And I said, you don't know me, but I want to do this. And they told me I was too old.
38 at the time. He missed the cutoff age for agents by 1 year. But eventually, his resume got noticed by the Department of Defense. It saw an advantage to bringing in someone familiar with the language and hardware of video games.
Ooh.
Like this virtual reality Oculus Rift headgear he's experimenting with.
So you're just using joysticks. You're just doing what any kid playing a video game would be doing, right?
That's exactly right, except moving them into the world of actual science and real cyber defense.
Now DARPA Dan has top secret clearance, though his department looks like an arcade. He has a team of 25 brainiacs and a budget of $500 million a year.
Is everybody given a lot of freedom to pursue what they're interested in?
Yes, you're given tremendous freedom. The only constraints on you are, one, it has to do something to help national security, so make the world a better, safer, more secure place.
So you're working for the military.
Absolutely. Okay. We're part of the Department of Defense. And two is we don't do incremental improvement. So the idea is it has to be something really revolutionary.
You know, what is just so unbelievable about this, and we talked about this quite a number of times, how back when I worked in distribution way back in the early beginning days of consumer internet, the day that we had a game show up skewed on our system that had a manufacturer name of the Department of Defense, and a bunch of us all raised our eyebrows and went, huh? How weird is that? And you know, then when I thought back telling that story on air quite a number of years ago, we realized that it was 18 years previous to that that they had skewed it up. And what they've done is created generations now of soldiers that are good at manipulating joysticks and playing video games and immersing themselves in this virtual reality that bleeds between reality and fiction. And look how we have drone pilots now sitting in a room with a joystick and a computer screen. Well, this is how now they're going to make all of this military technology. And I blame this on good old DARPA Dan taking advantage. I mean, it was no mistake that they brought in a video game designer.
This man is working on artificial intelligence software that would detect a hacker attack in real time and plug it in milliseconds with no humans involved.
Yes, that's the beginnings of Skynet.
If such technology had been available to Sony, that breach from North Korea could have been plugged right as it happened.
Oh, North Korea, that's who it was, yeah. North Korea attacked Sony because of the movie, some dumb movie they were releasing.
When DARPA first invented the internet 50 years ago, they just didn't imagine hacking would become such a problem.
Of course not.
That'd be fixed? Or do we just have to throw this one out and build a whole new internet from scratch with security built in?
I don't
Can the internet be fixed, or do we just have to throw this one out and create a whole new one with security built in? I mean, anyone who has known the internet from the beginning knew that it was never meant to be secure. But I almost think that that was on purpose, because they wanted everybody to dump everything about themselves out there and feel that it was freewheeling until the day they were ready to take control.
I think the internet is broken. I think the things we put on the internet are broken. What we're doing is we're putting a lot of devices on it that are unsecure.
And like so, what? Give me an example.
Pretty much everything.
Now, you can control everything in your house with a smartphone.
Our devices are increasingly connected online in what's called the IoT, the Internet of Things.
Unlock garage side door.
Affirmative. Unlocking garage side door.
Today, all the devices that are on the Internet of Things, are fundamentally insecure. There's no real security going on.
Always on, connected home.
So,
you know, I mean, this whole fear mantra of hackers under every bed and in all of our closets, right? We've been talking about that for the last year now. Now they're going to use that red button issue in the name of national security, in the name of bringing together the federal government, the technology companies, and a big fat revolving door to lock it all down.
Connected homes could be hacked and taken over.
What is the house temperature?
There are already horror stories of this happening to baby monitors
and
smart kitchen appliances.
So if somebody got into my refrigerator through the internet, then they would be able to get into everything, right?
Yeah, that's the fear, right? So the fear is as everything becomes networked, right? So first, maybe they can mess with the refrigerator. You think, well, that's bad. It's not that horrible. Your milk will go bad, or it's sort of prankish. Right?
Yeah, prankish.
But that refrigerator, of course, as everything becomes networked, well, maybe that also happens to talk to your garage door.
Or even to your car itself.
How many computers do you think is in a car like this?
Somewhere between 30 and 50.
Kathleen Fisher, a DARPA veteran, says a modern car is really a computer on wheels.
Kathleen Fisher, that's the DARPA woman's name, who showed how easy it was to hack a car after Michael Hastings' untimely death. And yes, interestingly enough, Kathleen Fisher says that a car is a mobile computer, and we found that out under DCMA. They want to prevent you from fixing your own car because you touching the software might damage something.
You've seen the ads of your GPS or smartphone linked to the dashboard. But this way, your car could be hacked and taken over remotely.
There we go.
They showed us.
Might look at the dashboard there.
What am I looking
through the steering wheel.
Ready, Leslie. All right.
This is a regular new car. The masking tape is only there because we agreed to obscure its make and model.
We'll give them the illusion they control the car for now.
Kaufman has been...
We'll give them the illusion they control the car for now. I mean, talk about, like, putting a threat out there. When I first saw this video, I was like, wow, are they threatening people? By showing how easy it is to stop the brakes from working, which we'll see here shortly, or accelerating the car, whoops, through a stop sign in busy traffic. Is this a threat to any of those who are going to stand up and say something or try to do something? Is this showing us that we don't have any way to protect ourselves?
I've been working on this for 5 years with multiple research teams.
You want to hit the fluids?
Oh, my gosh.
There we go.
There we go.
What's that? What's that? What's that?
That's, yeah, the windshield wiper fluid.
No, wait. So this is something that a hacker hit.
That's right. A hacker. Like, obviously, you didn't turn on the windshield wiper.
I did not.
Using a laptop, the hacker dialed the car's emergency communication system and transmitted a series of tones that flooded it with data. As the car's computer tried sorting it out, the hacker inserted an attack that reprogrammed the software, gaining total remote control.
How frightening is that? I mean, don't you think that maybe, just maybe, when they decided to put computers into cars back, I don't know, the 80s or the 90s, that they should have thought about making sure it couldn't be hacked? This is really frightening. And, you know, of course, once they did this expose, I'm sure exploits are out there everywhere.
Oh, my God.
The horn.
Doing that.
They're doing the horn.
They could control the gas, the acceleration. They
That's
could control
right.
the braking.
That's right.
And they could do this from anywhere in the world.
When they come out and they are facing straight there, like away from us,
yeah.
just saying, we'll just slam on the brake.
Yeah, sure.
Oh.
And
she
they're
stopped.
Stuck.
She is stuck dead.
Yep.
Oh, my God. That was terrifying, actually.
So now let's make another loop around.
Okay.
So just try, stop at the cones here.
She thinks she's going to be able to stop right at those cones. Let's make sure that she can't, and she's going to drive right through them.
Oh, my God.
We control that brake.
All right. There we go.
Oh, no. No.
Oh, she was slamming on the brakes. Oh, my God.
Not break the brakes at all. Oh, my word. That is frightening.
While there's no known case of a car hacked this way, security cameras have shown cars burglarized by hackers unlocking doors. You can find software to do that online for $25.
So let's make sure we tell everyone about that.
All this has alarmed Senator Ed Markey. Tomorrow, he's releasing a scathing report revealing that nearly all new cars can be hacked, but that only 2 out of 16 car makers can diagnose or respond to an infiltration in real time.
And so what the theft program does is it unlocks the car's doors.
DARPA researchers got involved in hacking cars and the Internet of Things.
Are you really trying to hack into it?
Yes, I am.
In an effort to invent unhackable code from military drones.
And is your goal to do it for drones and then have it apply to cars and my refrigerator and things like that?
Exactly right. I think that's when DARPA is at its very best. We're solving a specific problem for the military. I want to make sure their systems are safe, but I would like everything to be safe.
And now DARPA Dan is trying to reinvent search engines. Traffickers who sell weapons or young girls online remain largely hidden from authorities. Kaufman and his team set out to remedy that. First, they studied the time-consuming way law enforcement agents bust sex trafficking networks by clicking on one sex ad or link at a time on commercial search engines.
And we watched, and they did what you think. You know, they put in an address of a massage parlor or something, and then they'd write it down on a yellow sticky, and then they'd try to build it, and each to each. And we looked at that, and we said, there has to be a better way.
Especially considering that Google and Bing don't penetrate the dark web, where most illegal goods are advertised and sold.
So how interesting is it that he has now gone to Google and he came up with a search engine that indexes the dark web?
So DARPA invented Memex, with which you can click just one button and all the hidden information scattered deep in the web about an illicit activity is pulled together and revealed.
So, ding, da-da, ding, ding, ding.
You're building the network.
Building the network. That's right.
Chris White, who invented Memex, showed us how, in the case of sex trafficking, it can comb through all the sex ads online, over 60 million, and identify hundreds of names and numbers that link together and make up an entire trafficking ring.
Now, of course, they're spinning this with sex trafficking. I mean, they could do it with anything that's going to, like, pull on the heartstrings of America. But the plain fact of the matter is they are able to take, quote-unquote, anonymous users who are in a place being anonymous, something that they no longer want to give you the ability to do on the Internet, and find every connection and give a list of names and numbers.
How long did it take Memex to figure this out?
Instantaneously.
DARPA's inventions can take over a decade before they're transplanted from the military into the broader market, but not in this case.
We started using Memex about a year ago, in January of 2014.
Manhattan District Attorney Cyrus Vance Jr. says New York is one of several cities already deploying Memex to find sex traffickers.
And don't forget, too, New York Police Department was one of the first installations of the Microsoft Cyber Patrol Center as well. They're definitely pretty high tech there, and a task force working with global police forces.
We have 20 open investigations in which we are using the Memex tools and 8 open indictments.
Memex is so effective, the White House has asked to see if it could be used to monitor ISIS.
Oh, yes! We knew ISIS was going to come out there somewhere. Yes, the insurgents all over the globe, under your bed and in your closet.
A downside is that Memex could also invade our privacy.
Oh.
What do? You throw this out there, and it can do many good things, but there's the dark side.
There's always the dark side, and it's something we wrestle with tremendously.
I'm sure.
Our job is, A, to sort of say, look, this is what it is. Let's decide. How do we want to use it?
And then, how are we going to use it? The light side or the dark side?
Two, when some of the new programs we're working on, just beginning now, are there ways that I can get in here and still protect your privacy?
How much of your time is spent inventing things for the NSA?
Almost none, actually.
Because a lot of this stuff could be used by them.
Yes.
He can't control how his inventions will be used. These aren't video games, after all. But when it comes to beating the hackers out there, Dan Kaufman has total confidence.
Are you worried at all that by showing us all the new wowie-do things you're working on, that you're going to give car thieves an idea, or you're going to give someone who wants to break into my refrigerator an idea, or a terrorist an idea?
I think they have lots of ideas on their own. And what I want them to know is that there's somebody smart on the other side who's going to make that way harder. I want to make them think twice.
I want to make them think twice, which is exactly why I wondered about them showing how easy it was for them to hack your car and send you, like I said, into an intersection full of traffic or at 180 miles an hour into a tree. So anyway, all right, so we've looked at now DARPA and some of its incarnations, bringing DARPA over to Google, and what a great thing it is. We now have two of them over there, and the federal government is right in bed. if I can scroll down here, I had a story queued up here for probably the last 4 days that I wanted to get to. Military funds brain-computer interfaces to control feelings. A $70 million program will try to develop brain implants able to regulate emotions in the mentally ill. Now, what's even better, I just found a story before I went on to air today, and if you give me just 1 second, I can get back to my page. Because it now seems, we've talked about mental illness, we've talked about how they can diagnose schizophrenia just by speech patterns that somebody is speaking into a microphone. We also found out how they have some new drugs to help mental disorders that squirt right up your nose, like how wonderful. They also just dumped all kinds of federal dollars into mental health care. Yes, well, good thing, because now they just released a story out of good old Scientific American. Does schizophrenia exist on an autism-like spectrum? Evidence is growing that there may be no clear dividing line. Psychiatrists have long debated whether psychosis exists on a spectrum, and researchers have been investigating this question for more than a decade now. So look out, because I have a feeling that mental illness, especially with the director of National Institute of Mental Health of the United States government, now moving over to Google, and the federal agency that was just created with bringing on some sort of psychiatric help for the new 21st century Bernays to sell us all these programs, the mental health is going to be an ace in the hole for the federal government. Anyway, back to this original story about military funds brain computer interfaces to control the feelings of the mentally ill. Researcher Jose Carmina has worked for years training mock monkeys to move computer cursors and robotic limbs with their mind, and he does so by implanting electrodes into their brains to monitor neural activity. Now, as part of a sweeping $70 million program funded by the U.S. military, Carmina has a new goal: to use brain implants to read and then control the emotions of mentally ill people. Read and control. And remember, we just did a story last week. First time ever, National Geographic aired live brain surgery of an implant. They want to normalize this. They can fix you. Says this week, and this was May of 2014, this week, the Defense Advanced Research Project Agency, more affectionately known as DARPA, awarded two large contracts to Massachusetts General Hospital and the University of California, San Francisco, to create electrical brain implants capable of treating seven psychiatric disorders, including addiction, oh, look out, addiction, depression, and borderline personality disorder. This project builds on expanding knowledge about how the brain works, the development of microelectronic systems that can fit inside the body, and substantial evidence that thoughts and actions can be altered with well-placed electrical impulses to the brain. Now, we also looked at a story last week with DARPA not only using electrostimulation, but also optogenetics, as well as magnetics, to manipulate brain and body chemicals as well in some of their experiments. Anyway, back to the story. Quote, imagine if I have an addiction to alcohol and I have a craving, says Carmina, who is a professor at the University of California, Berkeley, and involved in the project. We could detect that feeling and then stimulate inside the brain to stop it from happening. The U.S. faces an epidemic of mental illness among veterans, including suicide rates 3 to 4 times that of the general public. And of course, yes, the poor veterans are always used for the guinea pigs. that's where they started this brain implant stuff, was with trying to cure PTSD. It says, but drugs and talk therapy are only of limited use, which is why the military is turning to neurological devices, says Justin Sanchez, manager of the DARPA program known as Subnets, for system-based neurotechnology for emerging therapies. We want to understand the brain networks in psychiatric illnesses, develop technologies to measure them, and then do precision signaling to the brain, says Sanchez. It's something completely new and different, and these devices don't yet exist. So under the contracts, which are the largest award so far supporting what's, oh, President Obama's brain initiative, yes, the brain mapping program launched by the White House last year, the UCSF will receive as much as $26 million, and the Mass General was up to $30 million for their research. Companies including the medical device manufacturing giant Medtronic and startup Corterra Neurotechnologies, which I think we just read about them in that other story about DARPA with their electrical stimulation, will supply technology for the effort, and initial research will be in animals, but DARPA hopes to reach human testing within 2 to 3 years, and I am pretty sure that they already started that because we read that story last week. All right, guys. Well, I think we are just about out of time. Tomorrow, we are going to dig into some deep brain stimulation technologies and how, of course, they are using that to fortify soldiers' minds. Make sure you stick around because it is Monday, so Ms. Lonnie Clark is live up next. And later this evening, we have our Interesting Times with Tim Kelly from This Weekend, Reality Bites with Neil Foster at 7 p.m. Eastern, Unlock the Door with Michael Cross at 8, Truth on the Tracks, brand spanking new from Brandon Turville at 9, Cutting Through the Matrix with Alan Watt at 10, and live at 11 p.m. Eastern, the Anti-Media Radio with Mr. Nick Burnaby and D.B. Schwartz. And wow, my bumper has gotten really late now, but I'm sure at some point it is coming. And if not, I will sing for you. If not, maybe I just can't hear it. No, it's not. There we go. All right, guys, have an awesome Monday, and I will catch up with you tomorrow. Everybody, take care.